The founders of this nation had a very different view than what is being told today.
D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Did you know that unelected judges are using the idea of a so-called living constitution to make their own laws?
The greatest virtue of a written constitution is that it is written.
With the Constitution under attack and the nation divided, what is the role of Christians?
But when a government seeks to supplant God, the Christian response should be to seek cultural renewal and legal reform.
We'll take a look at the battle for our nation's soul on today's Truths That Transform.
This is Truths That Transform.
Welcome to Truths That Transform, a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries, where we are standing for truth and defending your freedom. Are you aware that there is a constitutional convention taking place? It is redrawing our Constitution according to progressive principles without the input of we, the people. That constitutional convention is occurring almost daily within the American judiciary. And with dozens of federal judgeships still at stake, the final direction of this constitutional convention will be determined in November when our nation goes to the polls. The need for Christians to be engaged has never been greater. And on today's program, you will learn more about the illegitimate rewriting of the Constitution. You will discover what God's mandate is for your own participation in the political process. And we will update you on a revolutionary new training program that's sending Christians into the halls of power. As we begin, I had the chance to sit down and talk with Dr. Bruce Ashford, who is provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's written a book called Letters to an American Christian, and we discussed the relationship between Christianity and politics.
Dr. Kennedy used an expression once that the Church was established by Jesus to run like a train on two rails. One rail was the cultural mandate found in Genesis 1:28, that we are to subdue the earth and have dominion over it and rule in God's place. And the other rail, of course, is the Great Commission. We're to go and preach the gospel to every creature, to make disciples of all nations and bear witness to Christ. One of those rails, though, has eternal implications, doesn't it? And one of them, temporal implications. But why should we not neglect the temporal just because the other is eternal?
Yeah, so, you know, Dr. Kennedy was incorrigibly wise and perceptive. And I love the two-track analogy. I view the cultural mandate as a pre-sin or a pre-fall Great Commission, that what the Lord wanted from us, if sin had never happened, He wanted us to be fruitful and multiply and to bring under submission all things in this world, and spread His glory across the face of the earth by doing that. Now, because sin was introduced, and then because salvation was introduced in light of sin, we have added to the cultural mandate also the Great Commission. I think both of them have temporal, eternal and temporal implications. And so we, you know, redemption plays out on a creational stage, right? And so redemption, I think many Christians tend to view redemption as something that sort of hovers on its own, cut off from creational realities. And the point of it is that it doesn't. Everything redemptive plays out on a creational stage. And so for that reason, the cultural mandate still matters because it's a subtext for everything that we do redemptively. Mm-hmm. I think our goal as Christians, evangelical Christians in the United States, is try to help bring the United States into a missionary encounter with the gospel. And I think the most rewarding arena for doing that is politics and public life. And why in the world would we not want the Supreme Lord of the universe, our Lord Jesus Christ, for his saving works and word to be brought into politics and public life?
Even the Great Commission itself in Matthew chapter 28, Jesus said, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you." So the Great Commission even subsumes the cultural mandate.
It does, and even that first phrase, "all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth," the heaven and earth phrase throws us back to the Genesis account immediately. Jesus was saying, my lordship is as wide as creation. And if his lordship is as wide as creation, it is as wide as culture, and it is as wide as every aspect and every moment of our lives.
Abraham Kuyper wrote extensively about the idea of sphere sovereignty. The idea of spheres implies a limitation. Government is one of those spheres. Government has exceeded the boundaries of its legitimate authority. What are the implications for a government that knows no bounds?
You know, so God, when God created the heavens and the earth, we learned that he created different kinds of animals, different kinds of vegetation, for example. But he also created different kinds of culture, art, science, politics, education. And each of these spheres of culture has its own center, its own reason for existence, but also its own boundaries. And when one of these spheres tries to take over the other spheres, it's deifying itself. And when the state does that, it's especially dangerous.
So what does it look like when a government exceeds the boundaries of its legitimate authority? That authority has been given to it by God. What does it look like when a government exceeds God's boundaries?
You know, sometimes the government becomes like a giant octopus, as Abraham Kuyper put it, that it gets its tentacles in everything. The government exists for one purpose, and that is to bring justice to the individuals and communities under its purview. And so it brings provides minimal conditions of order, and protects people from violence, and serves as an umpire sometimes when there's fights between the spheres. But when it goes beyond that, it has made itself into a god, and it's gotten outside of its area of expertise, and that's never going to go well.
As Dr. Ashford explained, God created different spheres of influence, each with their own structure of authority, all under God. But in our day, the state has forcefully thrust itself into all the other spheres, growing increasingly powerful and controlling as it does. Dr. D. James Kennedy saw this happening and spoke powerfully about it. His daughter and my very good friend, Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy, joins me now. Jennifer, many people say Christians should just stay out of politics, but your dad saw that as a ploy, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He saw it as an effort to silence Christians. My father understood that there was a rigged game being set up to silence and marginalize Christians. Christians have been told that politics and religion are supposed to be separate from each other, and even many Christians have foolishly gone along with that notion. And at the same time, the far left has framed literally everything from the design of the family to the locker rooms our children and grandchildren use at school to be political. By intruding the state into everything and making everything political, the secularists have sought to confine Christianity to within the four walls of the home and the church building. My dad saw through it and boldly encouraged Christians to be involved in the political process, because Christ is Lord of all. Here's my dad, Dr. D. James Kennedy, with an important excerpt from his classic message, The Bible and Politics.
The Bible and Politics. Probably never in my lifetime, and not in yours, has there been such a controversy and furor of concern about the relationship of religion and politics. Hardly a week has gone by for the past year when we haven't heard something about it in the media. And I believe that the cause of all of this controversy has been that in the last decade or two, in particular, the government in this country has been expanding the parameters of its interest and concern until now it has included within the borders of its own legislative and judicial enactments matters that at one time, for hundreds of years, in fact, were considered to be merely in the realm of morality or spirituality. And an attempt is being made concurrently with that expansion of government control to silence the religious protest. I speak, of course, of the religion of secular humanism, which, of course, has indeed declared a full-scale war on Christianity in America. Well, what does the Bible say about our responsibility as citizens in this country and about government? Of course, Jesus Christ declared that we were to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. Therefore, it is our responsibility to do whatever good citizenship requires. Now, what is happening today is that the secularist and the humanist are trying to push Christianity off of the field and replace it with the religion of secular humanism, which gives way to its agenda of death and immorality, and then they want to have that so-called new morality enacted into legislation, and they have succeeded in doing it about 50% of the time. But let us not be deceived into supposing that that is not an enactment or an imposition of morality. But that is a far cry from the views of the founding fathers of this country. No, the founders of this nation had a very different view than what is being told today. Unfortunately, Christians by default have inherited a glorious patrimony, and they have allowed it to sift through their fingers like sand, until now we find ourselves in a great struggle even to maintain and to hold on to the glorious inheritance that we have in this country. And I hope the day will come when Christians will look upon apathy and indifference concerning their responsibilities as Christian citizens of this great nation as a base and iniquitous thing. And they would be ashamed to admit that they had failed to live up to their duty. And of course, we must continue to fulfill the great commission of Jesus Christ to take the gospel to every creature. That we must be not only the salt of the earth, exercising its privileges in the kingdom of Caesar to prevent the nation from corrupting altogether, but we must be the light of the world to bring the light of the gospel and eternal life to men who are perishing in darkness and ignorance. We must do that. Now, there are some who would accuse us of trying to Christianize America. Am I trying to Christianize America? You bet your boots I am. What was the last commandment that Jesus Christ gave to the church? Go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. That, my friends, is our high and glorious calling. By the grace of God, may we do it.
Dr. Kennedy spoke about the religion of secular humanism, a religion that has sought to crowd out all other religions in the marketplace of ideas. Its proponents have been wildly successful in the courts, as they have systematically driven prayer, the Bible, and Christian speech from schools, government institutions, and many public places. Unelected judges are essentially rewriting our founding documents and completely upending the First Amendment. How is it that we have a virtual constitutional convention taking place in our judiciary? And what can we do about it? Our own Dr. Jerry Newcomb takes a look.
It was a drama-packed news day today, courtesy of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. Kennedy announced his retirement at the Supreme Court this afternoon.
Is this potentially the end of Roe v. Wade?
We're looking at a destruction of the Constitution of the United States, as far as I can tell, based on all of the folks that he's been appointing thus far for lifetime appointments.
Why is a change on the Supreme Court suddenly ground zero in the culture wars? Some critics argue because our lives in America are virtually governed by the Supreme Court. But is that what the founders intended?
We certainly have a runaway judiciary. They are now making decisions that have no conceivable relationship to the Constitution.
What they didn't intend was for, again, a group of unelected judges to be able to make up what they thought the Constitution should have been. It's not supposed to be a constitutional convention every time the Supreme Court sits. It's supposed to be interpreting the document that we have.
We have to return to the Constitution. What does the Constitution say? Judicial activism is the problem, where judges make laws from the bench rather than simply adjudicating. Judicial activism has become so common in America in the last few decades that we have become virtually oblivious to it. But it was through this means, for example, that school prayer, in place before we even became a country, was suddenly declared unconstitutional.
You have judicial activists in so many areas around the country, and they're making law from the bench rather than just calling it like an umpire, as Chief Justice Roberts said during his confirmation. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be, but it's not in so many cases. I remember I was arguing a case defending the tradition of public invocations, and the ACLU attorney on the other side was trying to stamp out this practice at city councils in that case. And they stood before the judge and they said, Your Honor, the mention of Jesus in a public prayer is precisely the kind of evil that the Establishment Clause was created to prevent.
Experts often say that one of the tools being used to remake America by judicial fiat is the concept of the so-called living Constitution.
The idea that the Constitution is a living document is really preposterous. What they mean by that is that a judge can change it.
The crisis is that we have a judiciary that isn't as committed as it's supposed to be to defending the Constitution and to just interpreting the Constitution and the laws for what they are.
The important thing to understand is that the United States Supreme Court and its member justices are required to uphold the United States Constitution.
The Constitution is what it is. If you want to change it, that's what the amendment process is for.
A seminal example of judicial tyranny is that of Roe v. Wade, January 22, 1973. The Supreme Court then effectively declared abortion legal through all 9 months. Roe v. Wade is often at the heart of the confirmation battles in the Senate over judges. We keep hearing about the constitutional right to abortion, but was Roe based on the Constitution?
If you read Roe against Wade, it's a very interesting opinion. It's about 51 pages or something of that sort, 51, 52 pages. There's not an ounce of legal reasoning in it. He goes through what the ancient Egyptians thought about abortion. He goes through the English common law of abortion. He goes through what the American Hospital Association thinks about abortion, what the American Medical Association thinks about it. And then suddenly, after all this history, which is utterly irrelevant to the issue before him, he suddenly says, well, there is a right of privacy and it's broad enough to cover the right to abortion. Bang. It's a terrible opinion.
Another egregious example of judicial tyranny was the 2015 Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage, Obergefell v. Hodges, a decision written by the outgoing Justice Anthony Kennedy.
The Supreme Court in the 5-4 decision issued a decision that the Chief Justice called basically a lawless decision by 5 lawyers that was not based on the Constitution, not based on the court's precedent, but was only based upon their will. And he said, some people may rejoice over this decision, but don't rejoice over the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it. That's from Chief Justice John Roberts.
Whenever the judicial branch seeks to overrule God, it's going to be a concern for me and should be a concern for any Christian, since marriage is a divine institution. It's succumbing to the pressure of the culture and that which has become more and more acceptable. But I did feel like it overstepped its bound because it took it out of the hands of the people broadly. And so that was unfortunate.
The greatest virtue of a written constitution is that it is written. The same men who wrote the language of the First Amendment began those sessions with a prayer. And here, you know, a couple of years ago, they declared that it's now unconstitutional because it's a living, breathing document and we have to change with the times. I'm an originalist. I think we need to be. I think the founders were divinely inspired to put these protections in the way they did, and we deviate from that at our peril.
We need to get the courts back into their proper role, and they have so far gone across their proper role that it's going to take a lot to return them to where they need to be.
As you've just seen, judges have taken to rewriting our nation's laws. They've done it through the fiction of the so-called living constitution, which allows them to depart from the document's text and essentially make it up as they go along. Now, impeaching judges is very difficult, but nominating and confirming good ones has a powerful, positive effect. Currently, there are many excellent judges awaiting confirmation, and the next election could determine whether they get confirmed or not. We have an urgent new resource for you on this subject, and John Rabe is here to tell us more. John, the Senate is the key to the confirmation process. The founders wanted the Senate to provide advice and consent on major presidential appointments.
When we talk about the judiciary and the problems with the judiciary, really the Senate holds all the power on that. There have been so many good judges that have been nominated, and several of them have been confirmed, Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court being one sterling example, but there are many that are still awaiting confirmation. The upcoming election is going to be a huge issue when it comes to the composition of the Senate and what they get done, and people, I don't think, realize that the vice president holds particular power over the Senate. It hasn't been used. It's a little known power, but the vice president has the power and the authority to really determine the agenda for the Senate. And so we, Frank, have a new booklet that lays this out in a way that I think will be eye-opening for many people. It's this new booklet called Change the Senate, Change America by the Honorable John Hostetler. John is a former congressman from the state of Indiana, a constitutional expert, a constitutional scholar, if you will. He is also with our D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Statesmanship in Washington, D.C. And John Hostetler goes through using the constitutional text and explains how the vice president has the power to shape and guide the agenda of the Senate, a power that has been little used and that needs to be used to get these judicial confirmations through.
Very good. And we'll be happy to send you this fascinating new booklet by former Congressman John Hostetler, Change the Senate and Change America, as our thanks for your generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 11154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll-free 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. And John, those that want to better understand this issue for those people, we have another companion resource to go along with this booklet, correct?
We do, Frank. One of the things that has happened is because of a false understanding in the judiciary of what the First Amendment means, you've had the secularization of America. You've really had any mention of God peeled from public life, particularly as it pertains to the government. Well, Dr. Kennedy delivered one of his most important messages. It's called America's Greatest Hero. And in that message, he shows how integral Christianity and how integral God's providence was to the founding of America. And he takes it all the way back through history to show how step by step God was opening the way for this American experiment in which Christianity would flourish and be sent around the world from the American continent. And that's a heritage that we dare not lose.
Well, we will send you this classic message from D. James Kennedy, America's Greatest Hero is the title, as well as the new booklet by former Congressman John Hostetler, Change the Senate and Change America, as our thanks for your generous donation of $50 or more to the ongoing work of this ministry. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 1154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll-free 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. Trust in government is at an historic low, according to a recent Pew Research poll. And it's no wonder. We see scandal after scandal in public life. Missouri's governor and one of Minnesota's senators forced to resign in recent months because of sexual impropriety. Elsewhere, corruption seems to run rampant, with those in power seduced by the ability to skim money from the public trough. On one hand, it points out an important truth. Far too many people have put too much trust in government for too long. But we also need to note that fallen human beings do not deserve the sort of power we've given them as government grows and grows. And on the other hand, it points out the crying need for reformation. We need leaders who are people of integrity, men and women who adhere to God's commandments and understand and apply our nation's Constitution. Those are the kind of leaders we aim to equip through our D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Leadership Initiative in Washington, D.C. We are currently in the midst of our training, our first cohort of qualified students in biblical worldview, the Constitution, and the practical skills of statesmanship like media relations and negotiations. And our goal is to train hundreds more, sending them into the quarters of power to do the Lord's work. As our second president and signer of the Declaration of Independence, John Adams, once said, "The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity." Regaining those principles in government today are the key to our children's and grandchildren's future. D. James Kennedy Ministries is standing for truth and defending your freedom. I'm Frank Wright. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
We need to have a constitution where the words mean something, and that means, of course, that they don't mean everything.
As citizens, we're going to have to learn to imitate those virtues of Jesus Christ if we're going to prosper and flourish as a nation.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.